broadcast.
Welcome to another episode of Radio Werewolf. I'm your host tonight, Dion. It's September 30th, 2015, here on Renegade Broadcasting. I would advise you to check out all the great programs here on Renegade Broadcasting. In fact, it was nice to see Drew back here this past Sunday over on the Solar Storm with Kyle. 4.5 hours. Good thing I mostly listen to podcasts at work. That was a pretty long podcast, but it was a good one. So I encourage everyone to check that out and all the other shows here. So the first thing I want to get to tonight is the big news today. Apparently Russia is bombing Syria. So now we can see what that super secret meeting was all about between Putin and Benji, the nutty Yaju that they had over there last week in Russia. You know, Benji's over there telling Putin how the world works, giving him his marching orders, telling him what to do. But it seems the Jew media and the neocons are all up in arms about it, which really isn't a surprise. You know, even if it was their plan to begin with, you know, the Jews got to play both sides. So, but the one interesting thing about it so far, it just started, so there's not a whole lot to go on. But it seems like Russia is not even targeting ISIS areas. They're just indiscriminately bombing. In fact, according to the Defense Secretary, Ash Carter, he was pretty visibly frustrated at Russia's air campaign over Syria. He said that while he's taking the Russians at their word about interventions in the country, he thinks that the strikes will backfire and only serve to inflame the civil war. Further, he has indicated that he might trust the Russian statements. Carter challenged Moscow's claims that they're limiting strikes to the Islamic State targets. Without going into specifics, Carter told reporters it appears Russians' airstrikes Wednesday were in areas where there probably will not be ISIS forces. Russia escalated the Syrian conflict by launching an aerial bombardment against opposition targets inside Syria. The Obama administration, whose officials, including President Obama himself, met with Russian counterparts in recent weeks to discuss Syria, appeared to be caught off guard by the development. So apparently the U.S. intelligence didn't know anything about it, which isn't that big of a surprise. Seems like anytime anything happens in the world, the U.S. is the last to know. They spend billions of billions of dollars on their intelligence networking and so they spend billions and billions of dollars on their intelligence departments and all this, and they don't know squat about squat. I'm pretty sure they just play it by ear half the time. You know, you see those movies where, you know, the CIA is all like James Bond and crap, and I think that's a bunch of bullshit. I don't think it actually works that way. They just kind of play it by ear half the time. All right, where was I on this thing? Top administration official said, they delivered a nuanced message to Moscow in response. Earlier in the day, Secretary of State John Kerry told the United Nations Security Council the U.S. would not object to Russians hitting Islamic States or Al-Qaeda targets, but airstrikes just to strengthen the hand of the Syrian President Bashar Assad would be worrisome. According to the official narrative, they say that Putin supports Assad over there. So maybe that's what they're doing. Carter appeared to take a somewhat tougher tone. Of course he did. John Kerry's not really a tough guy. He said the underlying problem is Russia is trying to fight both ISIS while supporting Assad, which he said would escalate the civil war. This approach, he added, creates the potential for striking non-ISIS locations. Here's a quote from everybody's favorite neocon scumbag, John McCain. These airstrikes are indiscriminate in nature, he said. So, of course, if there's a war going on, John McCain's got to make sure he's front and center in the whole propaganda war. He always got to get his 2 cents in there, that piece of crap. And in fact, McCain delivered a blistering floor speech on developments in Syria, blasting what he called the Obama administration's leading from behind approach. I'm pretty sure Obama knows all about leading from behind. Just ask Larry Sinclair. Or you could ask the first tranny, Michelle. Actually, I was trying to find that clip earlier today where Obama did, in fact, call Michelle Michael. I couldn't find it, though. I didn't look that hard, though. But there is a clip out there where Obama accidentally calls Michelle Michael. It's pretty funny stuff. So you got the neocons and the president, the old commandering chimp, trying to profess their moral indignation over the whole situation so far. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens the next couple of days here. The neocons are going to play up the role. Oh, how dare Russia do this? What are they trying to do and all this crap? And, full well, the majority of them know what's going on anyways. That's the whole reason the old Nutty Yaju went over to Russia last week. It seems, that's quite a coincidence that Benji was over in Russia talking to Putin last week, and now this week they're doing this now as the airstrikes. Yeah, that's just a coincidence. There's nothing to see here, people. That's not really happening. So another interesting thing. Yeah, this was Monday. Seems the new Gallup poll came out. So America's trust in the media is at an all-time low, which is good news. It's not really surprising, but it is good news. The Gallup poll finds that Americans still don't trust the media and that the low level of trust remains at an all-time low. It's lower than it's ever been before. Only 4 in 10 respondents said that they have a great deal or a fair amount of trust in the media to accurately report the news in a fair manner. This result ties the historic lows measured in 2012 and 2014. The collapse in confidence is a decade in the making. A survey from 2004 and before, Gallup found that slight majorities trusted the media. It was slight majority. It was like 52%, right? You know, American confidence in the media has slowly eroded from a high 55%, a high 55%, in 1998 and 1999. Since 2007, the majority of Americans have little or no trust in the mass media. You know, trust has typically dipped in election years, including 2004, 2008, 2012, and last year. However, 2015 is not a major election year. Like, we didn't already figure that out. But, you know, I was looking at these. They have little graphs and everything. You know, you would think that the reason trust in the media kind of dips during the election years is because people, they might pay a little bit more attention than they usually would. Plus, you know, people have their favorite candidate, and you'd have to be a little bit, you'd be more aware of the skew in the media if they're talking bad about your favorite candidate. You know, what is there, like, at least a dozen people running for the Republican presidential candidacy right now. But, you know, that actually reminds me, like, the last time I don't usually listen to, you know, conservative talk radio, but once in a while, like when I'm in my car, I'll turn it on. And there's one, this was back, yeah, that'd be 2012. I was listening to Sean Hannity on my way home from work one day. And this was during the Republican primary debates. And this was when Ron Paul was in there. So they were talking about, you know, Michelle Bachmann and I don't know, whoever the hell else was there at the time. Mitt Romney, whatever. So they're talking about all these candidates, and not once did they mention Ron Paul. And this is supposed to be on a conservative, you know, right-wing Republican talk show. But not one time did they mention Ron Paul. It was pretty obvious the way they screwed over Ron Paul during that last primary. But it is what it is, folks. They're just going to go where it toes the official party line. So, according to Gallup, in 1999, 55% of Americans trusted the media, and today it has fallen to 40%. Gallup went on to note that this falling level of trust in the media mirrors the dropping level of trust in many of the nation's institutions, not to mention the growing lack of trust in the federal government. Which, that's, of course, another pretty good sign that people don't trust these major institutions anymore. You know, it's pretty obvious, you know, if you pay half attention to anything in the Jew media, that the entire institutions, you know, they're all pretty much falling apart. You know, you got the financial institutions, especially academia. You know, everybody's they're usually figuring out by now that going to college is pretty much a scam. But so, you know, these kind of people, they just gotta be known, gotta be shown, kind of guided to the truth of what's behind these institutions. You know, kind of push in the right direction. Show them it's the Jews behind all this crap. But of course, you know, actually, according to this poll also, there's a big age difference between who trusts the media and who doesn't. Of course, you know, those under 50 had a significantly less trust in the media than older respondents. You know, I also found that interesting that they had the cutoff date at 50. It was like either over 50 or under 50. It seemed like a pretty wide margin, you know, from 18 to 50, and then 50 up. But, yeah, so those under 50 had a significantly less trust in the media. Then those over 50, their trust in the media was 45%, which isn't really that high. But compared to the younger respondents, it was only 37%. And there was quite a spread between Democrats and Republicans, too. And while both had low levels of trust, at 55% of Democrats trusted the media, as opposed to the 32% that were Republicans. The results from the independents was similar to the Republicans. It was 33%, so it was like 1% higher. But you would think that, at least I thought, that when you look at the numbers, maybe they would change depending on who was president. Like if you consider yourself a Republican, you might have thought the media was better when Bush was in power. Or like now, Democrats would think the media is better, but it's not. Generally, generally, it doesn't matter at all. I looked at these graphs, the graphs ran from like 97 to the present. It seems like Republicans have always had a distrust of the media. You know, independents are already right in the middle. They're always in the middle, right? That's what makes them independents. And, you know, apparently the dumbass crats, they just love the media all the friggin' time. At one point it was like the highest in like 2002 or something like that. It was like 70% trusted the media. Which explains like a lot of their thought processes. You know, they put that much trust in the media, you're bound to be a dumbass. But so an early Gallup poll looking at particular media noted the trust in newspapers is currently at a low 24%, 8 points below the historical average. TV news measured 21%, which that is awesome. 21% of the people trust TV news, and that is 9 points below the historical average. So with an all-time low of 40%, you know, trust in the media overall, it kind of begs the question why you have so many people parrot this official narratives all the time put forward by the Jew-run media. And I kind of think that the main reason is that for most people, that's all they know. You know, that's the only kind of information they get is what they get from newspapers or TV or maybe like the main news websites like CNN or Fox News or whatever the hell it is. You know, they don't really go out of their way. They don't bother to research things or look into things. They just take it at face value and it's like, oh, okay, that's what's going on. And, you know, they don't pay too much attention to it. You know, they're too busy worrying about their fantasy cuckball and heating up their microwaved chicken pot pies. Yeah, so they don't have time to go and look and research things, trying to figure out what they're being told is the truth or not. But, you know, it's also the education system. It doesn't really teach any critical thinking or anything like that. It doesn't really teach anything at all. You know, for most of their lives, you're basically just taught to regurgitate information. You know, like an example, like when you're in school, they give you something to read. So you read it. Excuse me. So they give you something to read, and then you have to answer questions about it, and then you take a test. So they give you something else to read, you answer questions about it, and you take a test. You don't have to actually know anything about it. You just have to know it long enough to pass the test. And that's all it's set up to be. Yes, they're eating their Hot Pockets. Yeah, got Nietzsche 29 eating their Hot Pockets and their microwaved chicken pot pies and their other crap. Where was I? Oh, yeah. So, there's really no variation of thought at all. You know, you can't deviate from the narrative in the slightest. You know, if you do, then whatever you got on the test is completely wrong, and you fail. You're a big failure. You're a big loser. So you got to do exactly what the teacher tells you to do. You know, there's no room for an original thought anywhere. So constant repetition like this for 12 goddamn years of your early adulthood. Well, not adulthood, but your early life. You know, then it's even at least another 4 years if you go to college, where it's even worse because there's even more propaganda thrust in your memory hole. But it's like, it's just the same mentality. It's the same programming. You know, people carry that the same thought process their entire lives. So now, besides the cultural Marxist Jew thing that the media pushes, there's even more to the system of deceit than just blatant disinformation and political propaganda that they push in the overall news outlets and media outlets. So I got this quote here from Michael Pereni. He's an internationally acclaimed political scientist. It says, quote, "The news media's daily performance is not a failure of a skillfully evasive success. Their job is not to inform, but to disinform. Not to advance democratic discourse, but to mute it. The media gives an every appearance of being vigorously concerned about the day's events, saying so much, meaning so little, offering so many calories and so few nutrients. When we understand this, we move from a liberal complaint about the press's sloppy performance into a radical analysis of how the media serves the ruling circles," unquote. So that brings me to the, I don't know how many people are aware of this, because it doesn't seem like a lot of people are. There's a little act called the Smith-Mundt Act, which is an act in 1948. Well, they repealed it a couple years ago. So I got this article here that I got from, actually I don't know where I got it. Oh, I got it from Tech something. I don't remember. Anyways, this is, so the anti-media or anti-propaganda ban was repealed. it was actually, yeah, this is by Tim Cushing. This is from July 15th, 2013. The U.S. government has a bit of a PR problem, thanks to Edward Snowden's leaks in a decade plus of general distrust towards its constituents' rights and liberties growing out of its war on terror. Unfortunately, the government now has a chance to aim its official version of today's news at its citizens, thanks to the repeal of the anti-propaganda law. For decades, an anti-propaganda law was prevented the U.S. government's mammoth broadcasting arm to deliver programming to America's audiences. But on July 2nd, 2013, that came silently to an end with the implementation of a new reform. The result, an unleashing of thousands of hours per week of government-funded radio and TV programs for domestic U.S. consumption in a reform initially criticized as a green light for U.S. domestic propaganda efforts. The Broadcast Board of Governors, which produces programming like the Voice of America and Radio Free Europe, has been prevented from aiming this programming at Americans since the 1970s, when the Smith-Mundt Act, which had authorized the State Department to communicate with foreign audiences via various methods, pretty much any method. Was amended to prohibit domestic dissemination of the BBG's broadcasts. This was done to distance the State Department's efforts from the internal propaganda machine operated by the Soviet Union. Now, the Smith-Mundt Act, Modernization Act of 2012, which was part of the National Defense Authorization Act, has repealed the domestic prohibition, allowing the government's broadcasting to be directed at and created for Americans for the first time in 40 years. 40 years. BBG spokesman Lynn Whale said these efforts aren't simply pro-government hype machines. Quote, they don't shy away from stories that don't shed the best light on the United States, she said. She pointed to the charters of the Voice of America and Radio Free Europe. Our journalists provide what many people cannot get locally: uncensored news, responsible discussion, and open debate. Okay, now that is completely laughable. That any government official can say that with a straight face, considering the type of media we have in the United States is not overtly controlled by the government. A former U.S. government source with the knowledge of the BBG says the organization is no provada, but it does advance U.S. interests in a more subtle way. In Somalia, for instance, the Voice of America served as a counter-programming to outlets peddling anti-American or jihadist sentiments. Somalis have three options for news, said the source: word of mouth, Al-Shabaab, or VOA. As Will points out, this will bring a new level of transparency to the BBG, as a communicating to Americans is no longer prohibited. If nothing else, transcripts of BBG programming will be easier for Americans to get a hold of. A court ruled in 1998 that the limitations of the Smith-Munt Act exempted the Voice of America from releasing the transcripts in response to an FOIA request. You know, if there's nothing really to hide, why would you exempt the Voice of America from the Freedom of Information Act? Another possible plus is the fact that the BBG will provide a free, quote-unquote, local news source for immigrant populations. Yes, now you can get your news in Somali. While the BBG may provide a less biased news source for many foreigners, or at least provide a different bias, the purpose of its broadcast is new American audience is less clear. The fact that the State Department is behind the efforts doesn't do much to douse the fears that the BBG will become a tool for domestic propaganda, kind of like they did during World War II. The State Department's reaction to the leak of domestic correspondence by WikiLeaks was to block its employees' access to sites and demanded the digital documents be returned. How will a state-run press react to developments like this? Will it be forced to play the department's rules, no matter how illogical, or will it be able to deal with them in a more forthright manner? We're pretty much talking about the government. In a time where the administration seems to be forced to play defense with increasing frequency, it's hard to believe it won't be willing to exploit this addition to its PR arsenal. Like I said, not many people were really aware that the Smith-Munt Act was even a thing, was even in existence. Basically, you have the State Department running media, kind of like RT. So you got RT that's run by the old Kremlin. So let's say the Kremlin or Moscow makes a law saying that RT can't be shown in Russia. Well, what do you think they're going to be showing on RT? It's going to be nothing but a big propaganda arm. That's exactly what they're doing in the State Department. But now they repealed the law. Now the government can put any kind of nonsense on TV that it wants to. And of course, there's other rulings that say that the news doesn't have to report the truth. There's numerous court cases on that. But speaking of the government, here's another interesting thing I came across. This is one of those stories where I found it interesting and I put it in a little folder and I came back to it later. This is the Pentagon employing top scientists to improve U.S. propaganda machine. This is by Cassius Methel. It's actually from just July 29th, 2015. I found this on Anti-Media. You know, I know Anti-Media is not the best source for material, but actually if you look at I wouldn't say I read it all the time. I read it like once a week, see what they got listed on there. But then you always got to cross-reference it, you know, look it up, see if they really telling you the whole story and all that, which I always do most of the time. So this is the Pentagon employing top scientists to improve the U.S. propaganda machine. So throughout human history, governments have been interested in mastering the human domain, in fully understanding how to control the minds of their populations. In 2015, DARPA, they have a new program called the Narrative Networks, or N2. This program is now in full swing. So here's the synopsis from their official website. You know, you kind of have to kind of read between the lines on this one. Coming from a government document. So here's the synopsis that was on their website. It says, why do people accept and act on certain kinds of information while dismissing others? Why are there some narrative themes successful at building support for terrorism? What role can narratives play in causing and helping to treat post-traumatic stress disorder? These questions deal with the role of narratives play in human psychology and sociology, and their answers have strategic implications for defense missions. So they got to figure out how the human brain works for defense missions. DARPA launched the Narrative Networks program to understand how narratives influence human cognition and behavior and apply those findings in international security contexts. The program aims to address the factors that contribute to radicalization, violent social mobilization, insurgency, and terrorism among foreign populations, and to support conflict prevention and resolution. Effective communication and innovative PTSD treatments. Yeah, that's not a conspiracy theory, folks. That's directly from DARPA's own website. Narratives may consolidate memory, shape emotions, and biases in judgment, influence group distinctions to determine their influence on cognitive functions, requires a working theory of narratives, a understanding of what role they play in security contexts, and an examination of how to systematically analyze narratives and their psychological and neurobiological impact. So Narrative Networks has three parallel tracks of research and development. First one, develop quantitative analytic tools to study narratives and their effects on human behavior in security contexts. Two, analyze the neurobiological impact of narratives on hormones and neurotransmitters, reward processing, and emotional cognition interaction. And the last one, develop models and simulations of narratives influence in social and environmental contexts. Develop sensors to determine their impact on individuals and groups, and suggest doctoral modifications. So they're going to figure out how the brain works so they can figure out how to brainwash you better. They're going to figure out why do you like what you like and why do you believe what you believe so they can suggest doctoral modifications. They sure use the word narratives a lot too. You know, this project is intended how to analyze narratives that play on the human psychology, delving into the the way these constructs affect the mind. You know, a narrative is the best way of phrasing the choice of words, for example. You know, that is likely based on a strategy to frame information. You know, narratives exert a powerful influence on human thoughts, emotions, and behavior, and can be particularly important in security contexts. You know, DARPA researchers have published in the Journal of Neuroscience Methods. Published in the Journal of Neuroscience Methods. They discussed conflict resolution and counterterrorism scenarios and detected the neural response underlying empathy induced by stories is of critical importance. I don't think is supposed to be in there. Detecting the neural response underlying empathy induced by stories of critical importance. Yeah, I don't know why is in there. Is that supposed to be in there? So many narratives could potentially be used to manipulate the perception of a population using platforms of communications like television to subtly and potentially make a person think a certain way. Many people know this tactic by a more familiar term as propaganda, but actually there's a lot more to it than that. They're actually trying to figure out how your brain works to figure out why people believe certain things that they believe or don't believe certain things. If you word things a certain way, people are more likely to understand it better or believe it. And that's really what they're trying to figure out. Governments often use stories to present information, so understanding how we comprehend them is important, said co-author Eric Schumacher, an associate professor of psychology at the Georgia Institute of Technology. In addition to narratives, the study focuses on fear. Researchers observed a phenomenon of tunnel vision or impaired reasoning triggered in the brain when suspects processed, for example, a suspenseful moment in a movie. You know, I don't actually understand how that's a goddamn big breakthrough. Everybody's heard about that. You know, when you get afraid, there's tunnel vision. I mean, I thought everybody knew that. You know, you get focused on what you're afraid of. So either fight or flight, all that stuff. You know, it's a natural response to the body. It's how my girlfriend can find a spider in the dark when she's asleep. And then wake me up to kill the damn thing at 4 o'clock in the morning. All right. So, as the Washington Post summarized, quote, when suspense grew brain activity in viewers, peripheral vision decreased. Schumacher called it the neural signature of tunnel vision. Moments of increasing suspense were also associated with greater interference with a secondary task. In this case, responded by pressing a button when hearing a tone. Maybe they're just really into the movie. It is likely that predatory actions of war could come out of this particular accumulation of knowledge. The U.S. military has a long history of funding psychological experiments, some entrenched in human rights violations, you know, like the old experiments performed during the MKUltra era. Now that we got the Pentagon funding DARPA program, which pays researchers at colleges and other scientific institutions millions of dollars to enhance and bolster war methods. Such workplaces, great technological power in the hands of such workplaces, great technological power in the hands of the criminal government and military. DARPA paying geniuses to work for them could be considered an exploitation of intellectual capability to further consolidate government and military power. And actually, you know, that's actually not anything new either. You know, DARPA, the CIA, the NSA, all those big military contractor departments, they all go around and picking up the best of the best of whatever they do. Actually, DARPA is pretty funny. I mean, the NSA and the CIA does this too. But DARPA, they have contests where, like, you can build robots and stuff and to see who has the best robot. And if you win, you get a job. You know, the CIA and NSA, they have, the NSA has, like, computer programming contests and stuff. It's like, hey, can you build this computer program to do this certain thing? And they try to see who has the best programs and stuff. And they hire those people that do the best job. That's how they find these people. Or they steal them from Google. Apparently Google has a lot of good computer guys working for them too. It's kind of a joke between the NSA and Google. Keep stealing each other's guys. But so this is like a sliver of information in the full timeline of the U.S. military's acquisition of propaganda techniques. But even the smallest sliver of information is a necessary piece of the puzzle. If you read just that synopsis, that's not even, you know, a full paper or anything on anything you're doing, just that synopsis. Tells you the kind of crap they're going after. And this is just like the latest program that the government has developed to find new and better ways to control the masses. Just another thought control school. Let's see. All right. So, yeah, if you guys kind of haven't figured it out yet, I got to kind of have a little bit of a problem with control methods that's been used through the ages. I don't really take kindly to authority. But, yeah, we go to like an hour here. Let's see. I think I'll play a song here. I'm going to play a FGFC 820. This is Heart of America.
The tragedy of our day is the climate of fear in which we live, and fear breeds repression. When the weapons of mass destruction
labeled un-American.
Out conspiracy work. Them boys on the grassy knoll, they were dead within 3 hours. Buried in the damn desert, unmarked graves out past Earl England.
You know this for a fact?
Still got the shovel.
All right, welcome back to Radio Werewolf. I'm your host, as always, Dion. Let's take my damn headphones off. See if we got any callers here. Nope. Okay. Where was I? Oh. So it was Walter Lippmann who kind of coined the phrase, the manufacture of consent. If... Lippmann's concept may indeed be in effect today. Actually, it's definitely in effect today. In this regard, the status of the mass media and its faithful propagation of the establishment opinion that Western policy is fundamentally benevolent and its intention is an issue of paramount importance. What role the media played is in clarifying the real principles and motives of Western policy to the public, and what does it entail for the nature of Western democracy and the role of the population in the formulation of policy? You know, the mass media is clearly one of the most powerful institutions of a society. You know, for the most part, the public, it's the ultimate source of information. Kind of like I said earlier, it's like the only thing that anybody... Well, not anybody. It's the only thing that most people really even know. The structure of the mass media will therefore have a fundamental implication for the political and cultural orientation of the public. The vast extent of the manipulation of the media under the sway of business interests has been harshly revealed in the statement by John Swayton, who was the chief of staff of the New York Times during the 1860s. Quote, "There is not one of you who would dare write his honest opinion," unquote. He reprimanded his colleagues at his retirement party in September of 1880. The business of journalists now is to destroy the truth, to lie outright, to pervert, to vilify, fall at the feet of mammon, and sell himself to his or for his daily bread. We are tools, vessels of rich men behind the scenes. We are jumping jacks. They pull the strings, we dance. Our talent, our possibilities, and our lives are properties of these men. We are intellectual prostitutes. It is well documented that the elites, or the Jews, who dominate the various institutions of society share a common set of values and associations linked with their generally wealthy positions as members of a high privileged class. You know, these elites include the decision makers over politics, investments, productions, distribution, members of the ideological institutions involving editorial management corporations. They all have similar roles. These different groups all interpret one another in accord to their own shared values and associations. Furthermore, due to their common social position, they largely socialize into the traditional values that characterize their wealthy class. This has a significant impact on their outlook in the world, and consequently, their attitudes toward political affairs. The mass media have the ideological orientation of its staffing broadly restricted to the agenda held by the corporate ownership, who obviously have significant control over the media staffing. The result of this is that the media may become subversive in its general ideological orientation to the assumption and interest of the elite. Bob Franklin elaborated this, that it becomes the editors are simply workers, albeit at a high grade, and as such remain subject to the discipline of the proprietors. It would be difficult to persuade an editor that the proprietor is no longer in control of their newspapers. A succession of editors from Harold Evans to Andrew Neil acknowledged the power of proprietors in the autobiographies, which invariably detail their prominent removal from the editorial chair following a disagreement with the owner. Proprietors' powers to hire and fire makes them formidable figures, but also control all aspects of a newspaper's financial and staffing resources. Now, see, that's a pretty good point to bring up, because you always hear people, like if you say that, you know, the Jews run Hollywood. Well, it's true. They do. You just look at who runs, you know, these large corporations, and it's all Jews. Okay, maybe Hollywood's not a good example, because Hollywood is overrun by Jews. There's Jews all over friggin' Hollywood. Well, let's say the newspaper business, or newspapers in general, or even TV. TV's not as bad as Hollywood. But, you know, people say, like, oh, the owner's Jewish, right? Well, they'll say that the owner or the guy at the top, he's not really paying attention to what's actually in the newspaper, right? He's just running the financial aspect of it or whatever. And that's not true at all. You know, if you run a business, even if it's a large business, and you're just putting out a newspaper, they're going to look at the end product of what's coming out. And they're going to be in charge of what the end product is. So saying that just the editor or the editor of the newspaper is in charge, or the producer of the TV show or whatever, is it's a false statement is what it is. Right. So the implications of all this have been summarized well by the American analyst David McGowan. Quote, following the same course that virtually every other major industry has in the last two decades, a relentless series of mergers and corporate takeovers has consolidated control of the media into the hands of a few corporate behemoths. The result has been an increasingly authoritarian agenda has been sold to the American people by a massive multi-tentacled media machine that has become, for all intents and purposes, a propaganda organ of the state. Unquote. So the extent of the power that these elites have over the media can well be understood when it's noted that even Western intelligence agencies have a grip over the press. For example, the Internal Committee of the CIA reported in 1992 that, quote, we, the CIA, have relationships with reporters that have helped us turn some intelligence failure stories into intelligence success stories. Some responses to the media can be handled in a one-shot phone call, unquote. Former CIA Director William Colby was more forthcoming when he admitted, quote, the Central Intelligence Agency owns anyone of any significance in the major media, unquote. Consequently, it's easy to see how the legitimacy of elite interests can be henceforth be presupposed by the mass media in terms of a general, all-pervading set of assumptions, since these media, in terms of the general, all-pervading... Oh, I already read that. Since these assumptions are rooted in the elite ideology, the mass media's that is, of course, owned by the corporate elite, is generally unable to question seriously that ideology. You know, Ben Franklin said that while it's possible to cite cases... Oh, Bob Franklin. Not Ben Franklin, Bob Franklin. He said, while it's possible to cite cases where the media have toppled the powerful, there's a greater body of evidence to suggest that their role is more typically to serve the source of support. As the American political scientist Michael Peretti documents, the results of corporate ownership of the media, where staffing will be especially restricted to those who conform to the ideological requirements of corporate power, is that journalists rarely doubt their own objectivity, even as they faithfully echo the establishment political vocabularies and the prevailing political economic orthodoxy, since they do not cross any forbidden lines, they're not having to be reined in. So they're likely to have no awareness that they are on an ideological leash. And also, John Pilger, who has twice won British Journalism Highest Award, that of Journalist of the Year, as well as several other major awards, commented that the true nature of power is not revealed. Its changing contours are seldom explored. Its goals and targets are seldom identified. This is counterfeit journalism because the surface of events is not distributed. And the public is exposed to the powerful, persuasive message from above and is unable to communicate meaningfully through the media in response to these messages. Leaders have usurped enormous amounts of political power and reduced popular control over the political system by using the media to generate support, compliance, and just plain confusion among the public. So, you know, the way the media works is it's a top-down operation. The talking heads, that's exactly what they are. They just read teleprompters, kind of like the president. Even the man on the street, everything they say is just written for him. But since most people don't get their news anymore from TV or newspapers, you know, a lot of people get their news online nowadays, and the major news network, you know, websites, they're not any different. But an increasing trend that I kind of find worrisome, it seems like a lot of people get their news from social networks nowadays. Not a lot of people, a lot of younger people. But, you know, if you go through your Facebook feed or your Twitter feed or whatever, whatever these damn kids are doing nowadays, there's a lot of disinformation in there. But it's even worse when you think about it. So, you know, we've all heard of the Israeli megaphone. You know, it's that messaging program. I think it actually doesn't exist so much as a messaging program anymore. I think they actually have to go to the website to get notifications now. But it used to be a messaging. It was like a messaging program. If anybody's not really aware of the megaphone operation, it was basically a pro-Israeli run operation where people would get updates and notifications where there was an article or posted online somewhere that was either pro-Israeli or anti-Semitic. So people can go there and post comments or vote on polls or whatever it was. But yeah. So there's something like that that I found out recently. But it's even worse. It's actually, it seems that the CIA is sponsoring trolls, mostly on social networking sites. So Lynn Williams, a former CIA service trainee in DIA analysis, FBI and CIA uses trolls to monitor social media and interact with users to discredit information dissemination on the web. Williams explained that the CIA provides training tools to new recruits on how to troll the internet. Once a target is locked in, all open source information is obtained on the individual, and then any angle to discredit them in public forum is used on social media sites. Software is used to sift through the mountains of users on social networking sites. At the Atlanta CIA branch where Williams was trained, she personally witnessed CIA-sponsored and sanctioned trolling of Americans on social networking sites. In 2011, the CIA revealed its Open Source Center, where recruited personnel are used as government trolls to analyze, quote-unquote, websites for information pertinent to the objection of the U.S. government, meaning discredited targets on certain websites. Under the guise of conducting business intelligence, the open source software gathers digital data on targets, including all Facebook posts, Twitter posts, and comments on website threads. Those assigned to monitor this data can interact with users online through anonymous portals. Agents are designed to surveillance operations to message anyone, analyze political and religious speech, assess trends, and conduct electronic eavesdropping through cell phones, satellites, and other digital apparatus. Agents not only survey the internet and interact with the anonymous persons through direct posting, but they are also deployed to wander through the streets domestically and in foreign nations to monitor newspaper and other printed media to extract useful information about the temperament of the general public. And there's also another interesting segment of this program that they have. They also go through like YouTube, and they purposely go through and flag, you know, dissenting videos, and they usually, which I actually found, actually it was in the same article, but for some reason I didn't copy and paste that part. they almost always use copyright reasons for why they flagged the video. Almost always. Like, I think it said like 90%. It was like either 85 or 90% of the time they use, you know, the copyright infringement reason for flagging a video, which will almost always get it taken down. Because nobody is going to fight that. You know, almost not always. But usually people won't fight a copyright infringement request. Even if there's actually really no reason for them to say it's copyrighted. And another thing they do is they'll... they don't do this so much anymore as they used to. Like 10 years ago, they used to do this more often. They go through and find dissenting websites like Renegade Broadcasting. And they'll just steal the domain name. They'll just go right out and buy the domain name right out from under you. And there's not a whole lot you can do about it. But they say they don't really do that much anymore. But who knows if that's true or not. All right. Give me one second. Okay, so I guess this part was longer than I thought it was. Alright. I thought I was at the end of my notes here, but I guess not. I thought that part wasn't that long, but apparently it is. Actually, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to take a quick break here. I know I just took a break like a half an hour ago. But I'm going to take a break here. So the last part I got for tonight is how to spot COINTELPRO. And if you guys haven't figured out what the hell I'm talking about tonight, or at least part of what I'm talking about tonight, the last couple parts. Yeah, I'll just leave it at that. You guys can figure it out. So actually, I'm going to play... Yeah, play Civil Disobedience by Leatherstrip.
Show them what you can do. Then they won't ignore you.
All right, welcome back to Radio Werewolf. I'm your host, Dion. So we're going to go into how to spot COINTELPRO. So the subject of COINTELPRO kind of comes up quite a bit in different websites and different forums and podcasts and such. You know, got to watch out for the infiltrators. Like Weave. Wait, did I just say that? Folk Louise is a fucking scumbag. Anyways. Where was I? So, you know, a lot of people aren't really aware how vast and overreaching program seems to be in place for the primary purpose of controlling absolutely everything. You know, controlling the hearts and minds of the people. You know, government's going to go any length to keep people in check. It's pretty unbelievable, the projects to contemplate, but for groups with unlimited resources and the agendas to stay on top of the heap, you know, it's not really that hard to figure out. And never has this activity become more evident than in the 9/11 truth movement. But, you know, I don't really want to go into that specifically. But I'll give you a little bit of background information here. So there was this article called Cosmic COINTELPRO, which said in part that Richard Dolan's UFOs in the National Security State is the first comprehensive study in the past 50 years of the U.S. government's response to the UFO phenomenon in the United States. You know, the compiled evidence, which includes government documents, suggests that a group of specialists working in the shadows set up and executed the most massive cover-up in the history of the government, and that the Human Potential Movement and the subsequent New Age movements were key elements of the cover-up. In other words, not only were they used by the colorful community of alternative ideas as an unwitting tool of disinformation, it was also highly probable that most of it was literally created by them as COINTELPRO. You know, Dolan, by the mid-1940s, America's intelligence apparatus had reason to believe that there were artifacts in the skies that did not originate from America or Russia or Germany. These objects violated some highly sensitive military airspace and did not appear to be a natural phenomenon. One may presume that the affected national security authorities made it an immediate obsession to determine the nature and purpose of these objects, and we may infer that the issue probably had a deep secret by 1946 or 1947 at the very least. It was at this moment in time that the so-called Human Potential Movement was born, which wasn't really that much of a coincidence. By the mid-1950s, it was becoming obvious that things were getting out of control. In August of 1956, the FBI began its COINTELPRO operation, when traditional modes of repression, such as exposure, blatant harassment, and prosecution for political crimes, was failing to counter the growing insurgency and even help to fuel it. The Bureau took the law into its own hands Its methods range from far beyond surveillance and amounted to a domestic version of covert action, for which the CIA has become infamous throughout the world for. Usually when we think of COINTELPRO, we think of the most well-known and typical activities, which include sending anonymous or fictitious letters designed to start rumors, you know, publishing false and inflammatory or threatening information, forging signatures on documents, introducing disruptive and subversive members into an organization to destroy them from within, blackmailing insiders of a group to force them to spread false rumors or foment fictionalism, and on. But what a lot of people don't keep in mind is the fact that COINTELPRO also concentrated on creating bogus organizations. You know, these bogus groups can serve many functions, which might include attacking or disrupting bona fide groups, or even just simply creating a diversion with clever propaganda in order to attract members away involve them in time-wasting activity designed to prevent them from doing anything more useful. COINTELPRO was also famous for instigation of hostile actions through third parties, so it looked just like a disagreement between two individual groups, or there was no way to connect it to the government's operations. You know, kind of like a old wounded knee Martin over there. One second. So let's take a few little steps here. So the UFO problem kind of emerged in the national consciousness in 1947. Not long afterward, a lot of people were asking a lot of questions that the government wasn't answering. And so people began to band together to find out the answers for themselves. They started forming groups. And this is where things got just a bit curious. The thing that was most threatening by the UFO issue was that the standard monotheistic religions, you know, religions always seems to be the necessary component for political control or social control. You know, that's the mainstay of religion. It was most definitely under threat. You know, in fact, it seems to be true that it's not even clear that religions as we know them could have survived a full disclosure. So the logical conclusion is that part of the main reason for the cover-up was to protect the religious status quo, or to create a new religion which masses of people could be controlled. As things stood at the time, protecting the religious status quo, mainly the social controls that stem from religion, which is iffy at best. After a century of scholarly investigation into religious texts and raising many questions about the old-time religion, there were a lot of people in society who were most definitely turned away from religious dogma. It's fairly simple to take the next logical step and see a combining of the questions of those who were dissenting with religion with the questions of those who wanted to know what the heck was going on, and in terms of possible extraterrestrial, there seems to be a dangerous and explosive mixture. So it's something had to be done. So the activities of COINTELPRO in attempting to neutralize political opposition. And by now, they've been pretty well exposed. But now we're concerning the with the fact, in addition to political activists, it also seems that COINTELPRO is also particularly targeting groups that seek the truth about which the interactions between the government and the so-called aliens, that a long-time cover-up of these matters has been in effect, is certainly evident. The COINTELPRO files show that the U.S. government targeted a very broad range of religions, labor, and community groups opposed to any of its agendas. And it's only logical to assume that the same type of operation would be created to cover up these alien agendas. Such a theoretical COINTELPRO operation also goes far to explain why, when the sincere research of Fields, he or she discovers only lies, lies, and more lies, and confusion and disinformation, that is most definitely the signature of COINTELPRO. I mean, like, you can look at the 9/11 truth movement. You know, you got people, are there planes, are there no planes? Was it mini nukes? Was it nanothermite? Was it, I don't know, microwave weapons, fucking space aliens, all kinds of crap out there. So the point is, nobody knows what the hell is true or not, and nobody knows what the hell is really going on. You know, it's all designed that way. So considering all this, the powers that be, that the chief means of diverting attention and covering up the truth would be to literally fund and create the New Age and Human Potential movement so that it would follow their agenda of keeping secrets. You know, create a new religion of aliens that, you know, quote unquote, they controlled. You know, in other words, it's extremely likely that the most successful and popular metaphysical mavens and New Age and impressionists of COINTELPRO or are COINTELPRO agents, either conscience or dupes of those who are. The objective seems to be to attack and neutralize those who are seeking the answers, those who are sincere, who are bona fide research, or who do bona fide research, and seek to examine the truth, are infiltrated, attacked, and marginalized according to standard COINTELPRO procedures. What all this seems to suggest is that the powers that be have developed COINTELPRO to an all-new level of social shaping, cultural brainwashing, and the main targets of this activity would include virtually anyone who is seeking the truth about the shifting realities of the world. The cases of COINTELPRO activities against political groups must be no more than the tip of the iceberg, given that the great bulk of the COINTELPRO type operations remain secret until long after their damage has been done. By all indications, domestic covert operations have become a permanent fixture of U.S. politics and social programming, and it's hardly likely, considering the evidence, that the New Age and Human Potential fields are exempt. The implications of this is pretty alarming for those who manage to get close to the truth of the matters, despite the many obstacles in their path. You know, they face national covert campaigns to discredit and disrupt their research and reputations. You know, clearly COINTELPRO and similar operations under other names also work to distort academic and popular perceptions of problems faced in our world. They have done enormous damage to the search for the truth. You know, according to Dr. Bruce Hoffman, director of RAND, quote, terrorism is changing. New adversaries, new motivations, and new rationales have surfaced in recent years to challenge much of the conventional wisdom. And he's right. The only problem is the reader is largely unaware of the definition of new adversaries that might be implied in his remarks. You know, I think it's pretty easy to read the 9/11 truth movement into the description of COINTELPRO that started with the New Age. In fact, after all that practice, it must have been a piece of cake just to move in and opt out, or move in and co-opt those who were suddenly drawn to an alternative point of view by 9/11. You know, a lot of people have absolutely no interest in metaphysics and religion and so forth, but they do have an interest in politics and history and current affairs. You know, I'll never forget reading John Comiskey's article, Agents Provocateur, where he describes where he was and what he was doing on that fateful moment on September 11th, 2001. So here's actually the article from John Comiskey. I remember that day all too well. I was standing in front of my TV. I just awakened and flipped it on, intending to zap the ticker to ESPN to catch the latest sports news, a typical daily habit that occurs just before I stumble into the kitchen to make my coffee. By chance, the tube was set to NBC, where the Plastic Today Show commentators were talking about a plane that crashed into the World Trade Center. So I never changed the channel. I just stood there, eyelids glued apart, and watched a plane number two glide into the South Tower and into history. Actually, that's pretty much the same story I got. That is just about the same exact thing. I wasn't going to go watch ESPN. I forgot why I turned the TV on. But yeah, I turned on the TV and there was this damn building on fire. They said, oh, a plane accidentally struck the tower. And I'm like, well, that's weird. And then like 5 minutes later, the other plane hit the other building. And I was like, what the fuck is that? That's some crazy stuff. That was no accident. So I just stood there. I didn't know for how long. Eventually, I turned around, made the coffee, and listened to the gas commentators of the NBC crew. I don't remember now what it was triggered my next verbal outbursts, whether it was Katie Couric reporting the government saying that it was Osama bin Laden who was behind the attacks, or some vaguer speculation about Arab terrorists. I don't know how I turned around, stalked into the living room, and then with the most certain self-assured vehemence I've ever shown in my life, I started bellowing, no way, no freaking way. I knew then, right then and there, that 9/11 was an inside job. Nothing I've seen, heard, or read since have caused me to feel even the merest shadow of doubt about what I felt at that moment. There are millions of people who had the same reaction, but very few of them in a position or with the talents to say anything about it. Most of them are not into metaphysics, religion, or researching strange phenomenon. That's too bad. There's a lot about COINTELPRO that we could all learn together. Now, one of the most interesting things that we have observed about COINTELPRO is that the way it shifts and warps its response to possible exposure. Well, I believe that I was the first to realize the extent and nature of the operation, and I began publishing my speculations about it with the Adventures of Cassiopeia back in the early 2000 or 2002. Not long after that, the individuals I knew to be agents of COINTELPRO began to start ranting about COINTELPRO and pointing the finger this way or that. Up to this point in time, the lid was pretty much remained shut on the subject. I guess they were hoping that people would forget about it or think it was over and done with back in the 70s, you know, that it was nothing to worry about. But I saw it and wrote about it, and they just had to do something about it. So in typical COINTELPRO fashion, I started producing endless noise of to obscure the signal. Particularly attention was paid to me. I guess I had to be punished for daring to expose and calling a spade. I was accused of being COINTELPRO myself, of being funded by George Soros. My husband was being accused of being an ex-Cold War nuke scientist. And the previous attacks had alerted me to the COINTELPRO problem to begin with. The vile and vicious defamation, character assassination, and so on ramped up to an unbelievable level. As usual, I learned a lot by observing and doing research to find out who connected with whom. So many things had been on the web before 9/11 suddenly disappeared. Many things also disappeared from the usual reliable web archives as well. In some instances, we had the foresight to archive pages, but not always. I even have had some pages archived and certified in my files that may come in handy someday. So not long after I published research findings on the people behind the Godlike Productions forum, we received an email warning and two personal contacts of a threatening nature. Let us just say that when you begin to find connections between such popular websites and a drug and pedophile rings, you are cruising into dangerous international trafficking waters, and discretion may very well be the better part of valor. I removed the article from our website, though I do still tend to research. I still send it to researchers who ask for it privately. Actually, you know what? We got about 10 minutes. I think I'll get past his backstory part from, what's this lady's name? Yeah. So I'll get past his backstory part here from Laura Knight about this 9/11 stuff and this other stuff. So here's the main part. Here's the part that actually matters. So, Right. So one way to neutralize a potential activist is to get them to be in a group that does all the wrong things. You know, messages don't get out, so a lot of time is wasted. The activist is frustrated and discouraged. You know, nothing good is accomplished. Maybe they'll just leave the movement altogether. You know, FBI and police informers and infiltrators will infest any group they have phony activist organizations established. The purpose is to prevent any real movement of justice or any type of peace from developing within a certain region. You know, agents come in small, medium, or large. They can be, you know, any background, maybe male or female. You know, the actual size of the group or movement being infiltrated is pretty much irrelevant. It is the potential for the movement that has... It's the potential of the movement that has for becoming large, which brings on the saboteurs. It's the agent's job to keep the activists from quitting such a group, thus keeping them under their control. You know, some situations to get control, you know, the agent will tell activists that you're the person who's dividing up the movement. Or they'll try to pin people against each other, and then when you get fed up and you want to leave, they'll turn it around on you that it's all your fault when they're the one who was doing it the whole time. Or then they'll turn around and try to undermine the actual leadership of the group. You know, they'll try to tell other people that you should be in charge because you're better than this guy. You know, first it's kind of designed to enhance the person's self-esteem. But, you know, his or her narcissistic admiration of the activist or altruistic intentions increase as he or she identifies with and admires the altruistic declarations of an agent, which are deliberately set up to mirror those of the activists. This is the malignant pseudo-identification. It is the process by which an agent conspicuously imitates a certain behavior to foster the activities or foster the activist identification with him or her, thus increasing the activist's vulnerability to exploitation. The agent will simulate the more subtle self-concepts of the activist. You know, activists and those who have an altruistic self-concept are most vulnerable to malignant pseudo-identification, especially during work with the agent with whom the interaction includes matters relating to the competency, autonomy, or knowledge. The goal of the agent is to increase the activities, or not activities, I keep saying activities. The goal of the agent is to increase the activist's general empathy for the agent through pseudo-identification with the activist's self-concepts. The most common example of this is the agent who will compliment the activist for his competency or knowledge or values of the movement. On a more subtle level, the agent will simulate effects and mannerisms of the activist, which promotes identification via mirroring and feelings of twinship. It is not unheard of for activists enamored by the perceived helpfulness and competence of a good agent to find themselves considering ethical violations and perhaps even illegal behavior in the service of their agent or handler. The activists will be deluded into thinking that the agent shares this feeling of identification and bonding in an activist social movement setting. The adversarial roles of the activists naturally play vis-a-vis the establishment / government fosters ongoing processes of intra-psychic splitting, so that the twinship alliances between activists and agents may render whole sectors of reality testing unavailable to the activist and literally lose touch with reality. Activists who deny their own narcissistic investment or do not have a good idea or the self-concepts of who they really are and consciously perceive themselves to be helpers endowed with a special amount of altruism are exceedingly vulnerable to be affected with the emotional stimulation of the accomplished agent. Empathy is fostered in the activist through the expression of quite visible effects. The agent's expression of such simulated effects may be quite compelling to observers and difficult to distinguish from deep emotions. It can be identified by two events, however. First, the activist who has analyzed his or her own narcissistic roots and is aware of his or her own potential for being emotionally hooked will be able to remain cool and unaffected by such emotional outpourings by an agent. As a result of this unaffected cool attitude, the second event will occur. The agent will recompensate too much too quickly following such an effective expression, leaving the activist with the impression that the play has ended and the curtain has fallen, and the imposture for the moment has finished. The agent will then quickly move to another activist or victim. All right. The fact is that the movement doesn't need leaders, it needs movers. A good agent will want to meet as often as possible. He or she will talk a lot and say little. One can expect an onslaught of long, unresolved discussions. Some agents take on a pushy, arrogant, and defensive manner to disrupt the agenda, to sidetrack the discussion, to interrupt repeatedly, to feign ignorance, to make an unfounded accusation against a person. Then there are saboteurs. Saboteurs will pretend to be activists, but he or she will write, you know, long, lengthy flyers or website posts. You know, have demonstrations and out of reach places that nobody really cares about. You know, try to solicit funding from rich people instead of grassroots support. Display banners with too many words. Trying to confuse issues. Make the wrong demands. Compromise the goal and have endless discussions that waste everyone's time, like creating Terminator robots to kill niggers. The agent may accompany the endless discussion with drinking, pot smoking, or other amusements to slow down the activist works. Then there's the more blatant of the kind, which is the provocateurs. You know, they want to establish leaders to set themselves up for a fall in order to stop the movement. Or they suggest doing foolish or most likely illegal things to get activists in trouble. You know, they encourage militancy. They want to taunt the authorities, you know, going out and yelling at cops, calling them a bunch of pigs, attempting to make the activists compromise their inherent values, attempt to instigate violence, or instigate. You know, activism should always be nonviolent. Attempt to provoke a revolt out of people who are ill-prepared to deal with the reaction of authorities to such violence. And then there's also the other one that's one of the most easy to spot are the informants. You know, they want to sign up for everything and be at everything, and they'll show up, and they're the best kind of members to have in any group. You know, they always ask a lot of questions. They want to know what events the activist is planning and who's going to attend. You know, attempting to make the activist defend him or herself to identify his or her own beliefs and goals and level of commitment. You know, you're not committed enough. You gotta go out and do everything. And the other kind is there's the recruiters. You know, legitimate activists don't subject people to hours of persuasive dialogue. You know, their actions, beliefs, and goals speak for themselves. You know, groups that do recruit are like missionaries, military and fake political parties, movements set up by agents. Then there's surveillance. Always assume that you're under surveillance, especially nowadays. You know, if you're on the internet, if you got a smartphone, just assume, always assume you're under surveillance. You know, at this point, you know, if you're not under surveillance, you know, you're not really doing anything at all then. Then there's the ones that use the scare tactics. You know, they always use those. You know, there's tactics such as slander, defamation, threats, getting close to disaffected or minimally committed fellow activists to persuade them to turn against the movement and give false testimony. They will plant illegal substances on activists and set up an arrest. They'll plant false information and set up exposure. They'll send incriminating letters or emails in the name of the activists and crap like that. If an agent is exposed, he or she will be just transferred and then replaced. You know, COINTELPRO is still in operation today under a different code name. We really don't know what that is, but it's still taking place. You know, it's no longer placed on paper where it can be discovered through the Freedoms of Information Act. You know, you can't get that kind of information. It's a matter of national security. They always play that one nowadays. Since they got the old Patriot Act, you know, everything's a matter of national security. Yeah, FBI counterintelligence program's stated purpose is to expose, disrupt, misdirect, discredit, and otherwise neutralize individuals who the FBI characterized as opposed to the national interest. You know, national security means the FBI scrutiny from the people ever finding out the vicious things it does in violations of people's civil liberties. You know, a slight breach of orthodoxy insufficient to terrify authoritarian ideologues who see it in the collapse of the system of thought control has also been so effective in depoliticizing American society. Right. So that's how you could find you could figure out who's an agent and who's not. People want to join groups. Personally, I wouldn't join a group. That's just me. I'm not really a joiner. I'm not one of like large groups of people around. Kind of a small network kind of guy. Like a small cell kind of guy. But yeah, that's about it for tonight. I'd like to thank all the listeners tonight. And as always, check out the great programs here on Renegade Broadcasting. I think we'll see what I got down here. Oh, so yeah, last night I was listening to Sean's show. Ray called in, and he said he was going to call in tonight, and I was all ready for him. He was all ranting about that damn The Fix song, One Thing Leads to Another. So I think I'll close it out with that, even though he didn't call in. But, yeah, this is The Fix.
You see that? flow, and this is my impression of a politician. I believe in the people, and their cars, and Progressive, and the fact that you, yes, you can plug in Snapshot to save even more money for being a good driver. I also believe in Sasquatch, but more as a joke, but also kinda seriously.
Safe drivers save with Snapshot from Progressive.
I approve of this message, and Sasquatch, if you are real, you can totally be my running mate.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company. Snapshot not available in all states.